all of the banners there had the prof, like they had it IPA spelled out. How do you say it? I was like, this is proper tourist education. You land, you go through the gate. It's like, this is how you say
indoctrination.
Well,
what we're going to do is we're going to teach you how to talk Kentucky.
We're going to teach you English. We're going to teach you how to talk proper.
It's Kentucky.
Kentucky?
There's no E. It's not Kentucky. It's a very guttural, like, scooping kind of U. And it's Louisville. So, this is why I don't watch the coverage of Churchill Downs, because it hurts.
Well, you know, not everybody could be all metropolitan, be from Louisville, Kentucky.
You're just wrong. You know, Veronica has all the authority to boot you right out of the show. She just has to find the button and just kick you. Boom, you're gone.
Just come right back in because I'm the admin. I understand. I was equally frustrated when we were playing the Knicks way back in 97, whenever the Rockets won their first one. And fucking New Yorkers pronouncing it Houston Rockets fucking drove me bonkers. Only goddamn place on the planet that has a Houston street is spelled like Sam Houston.
People of Planet Houston.
Look, I don't need Superman references on this show, okay? It's bad enough I got you. You know, because you're a walking Superman joke. Parody, I might add. Parody. The cats finally descend upon us.
The abuse.
I am so abusive. Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Robot Society. I'm Paul E. Cooley. Joining me, as always, is a Veronica what Jaguar. And Terry Mixon, who, yes, is very much redecorating because gone are the bookshelves that were crumbling and leaning like rotten, crooked teeth. Wow, it's clean. Holy crap. Oh, man. This is the first time I've ever seen this room clean in all the time that I've been.
Yeah, look at the floor. Check that shit out.
I didn't know you had a floor.
Or the lack thereof.
There's a floor there. It's just not.
I know. Exactly. You said, check that shit out. I'm like, there's no shit there. That is devoid of shit.
It's not covered in fluff and cats. I mean, you know, I didn't know you had a floor, really. I thought you just had, like, rugs made out of cat fur.
Well, it's more like a quantum state. The floor maybe exists, but maybe not. You know, you're just not really sure.
So when I get my quantum haircut, is it what?
Is it made of lava? Is the floor made of lava?
Oh, my God. My brain.
That game just hasn't been played the same as it was since Pompeii.
I was watching a YouTuber today, and he's playing Dead Island 2, which I will definitely have to get my paws on it when it's not like $70. And while he's playing it, he asks Alexa to make zombie jokes, and they were just bloody awful. But there were a few that I hadn't heard before. So it was funny how bad they were. They were dad jokes squared. They were bad news. So, yeah, at least Alexa has a sense of humor to tell you zombie jokes. I don't know where she's pulling them from. There's really no telling. Well, apart from redecorating, Terry, what the hell have you been up to?
Honestly, that's taken up my week. I started this Sunday. I had an incident where I stepped on a furniture tack from one of the shelves.
Oh.
So that was exciting. Lots of blood everywhere there. Trip to the urgent care, get a shot of antibiotics. But it's healed up fine. But cleaning the floor, allowing time to drive, rinse and repeat to get everything clean, it took more days than I really wanted to think about. So getting all of this done has definitely eaten up my week.
I get that. I can see that. It's total chaos. I'm well aware of total chaos. Much.
It's going to be fun once I'm done because I'm going to put two of the 5x5 IKEA Calyx shelves in here to hold my books. The third one I was going to put in here, but I've decided to relocate to a different room so I'll have more room for the cat wall furniture.
I was wondering about that, if you were going to reconfigure so you were making room for all this crazy this cat-traption that you're...
Since my wife went absolutely insane in buying this, you know how you know that old saying of, it's on sale, I saved money? She really lived that mantra.
I know. You told us when she did this, and
I was wrong.
Going to see the results.
I was wrong when I told you. She bought it at 50% off.
Which means she bought four times as much shit.
Well, when this happened around, I told you that it was 50% off, and she spent about $1,600 on it.
Right.
I was wrong. It was 50% off, all right, but it was about $3,000-something worth of cat furniture.
Oh, my God.
I applied 50% off what the 50% off number was. I did not realize how that was going to work out. So we have more than enough cat furniture to suit this room, the downstairs, and probably every other open piece of wall in this house.
Presenting the Mixed and Feline Circus.
No. It is beautiful stuff. I will grant you that. Beautiful stuff. But there's a lot of cat furniture.
Wow. Just wow. Oh, jeez. I can't wait to see. I've actually been thinking about what I'm going to do with Shadow, because I'm thinking about putting a stair step up that he can climb up there and be safe and secure in the room.
I could probably fix you up. I am almost certain.
Fix up the whole neighborhood.
I am almost certain that I would be able to pass on a few pieces from one of these sets, which I believe she bought a total of 7 or 8 sets.
Oh, my Lord.
So I am confident that I could pass you on something that would fit your needs.
Are you just going to be playing cat furniture Jenga for the next, like, several months?
Christmas is coming up. There might be cat furniture descending on the Cooley household. Maybe with another cat in the box.
Fenestratingly. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. I've got enough chaos right now. Thank you very much.
Oh, I think you know, handing over cat furniture with a couple of kittens in the box would be just awesome for you.
Julius agrees.
That's far too much responsibility. No. Hell no.
They could be the riding kittens.
Well, V, how the hell are you doing?
Oh, let's see. I am still putting out auditions. I started recording a project for my pseudo towards the end of this week, so that should wrap. It's a short one, so it should wrap early next week.
Cool.
Yeah, fun stuff. I'm waiting to hear back on some other auditions for romance, for some sci-fi, space opera-y sort of stuff. We'll see what happens. And other than that, the house has been a wreck because teenagers and moving teenagers back home from college. So,
at least you're no longer playing teenage Jenga.
Yes, they are all back in their own rooms. Nobody has to. All the rooms have been painted. All the paint stuff has been put away. Now it's just like getting the donations out of the house and figuring out, you know, where to put the few things that are still scattered in the hallway.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I realize I'm on the 4th iteration of my writing outline. Because I went through and I just started asking questions and writing questions in the margins. And I'm going through and answering each of those questions. And sometimes it's a very quick answer. I can incorporate it. And sometimes I realize I've got to come up with a whole back story for a character or an entity, and that takes a couple pages to put together. But yeah, I found people who were like really hardcore villains, and I found people like, no, maybe they're not so bad. No, they'll be okay for now. And that's like, huh, this person's gonna be a real bastard later on. Let's just hang on to him, put a star by that name. So I've been getting a lot of use out of the behindthename.com random name generator.
Oh, no.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, God. Scribner's got one of those built in, too.
Wait, what do you mean?
A name generator.
Yeah, behind the name, I've been using that forever because it gives, like, meanings. So if I wanted to get a name that had a certain meaning or a certain origin, then I would go there. But it finally gets to the point where I stop coming up with names and I just start listening to, you know, who's being yelled at on the hockey matches. It's like, oh, that's a good name. Let me throw that in there.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. Anything like that. Seventh Sanctum? Yeah. Scary. Well, I am proud to announce I got Neptune Scar's advanced reader copy to the patrons and BMAC folk this weekend, or Friday. Yeah, Friday. Thursday or Friday. I lose track of days so easily now. It's been like that since March. So I got that done, which means I can get back to recording at some point, assuming my voice cooperates. And then I've also got an ancient trap up there for beta readers. Try and get that one shored up so I can get it scheduled for publication later this year. And also so I can have a reason to go back and re-record some of the really bad chapters where my voice was falling apart. And in addition to that, we have a new addition to the Fiendling family, which was a dog named Annie, now is a dog named Violet. Don't ask, but basically she's named after the character in The Incredibles, the gothic girl who is really, really shy. So that's what she's named after. So she was in the shelter for like a year, and she's really, really fearful and skittish, and really skittish now more than fearful. But this morning she wanted to play and had a waggy tail, and we've only had her for 5 or 6 days, so we made incredible progress with her. I don't know, and I doubt that she will come in today, but she knows how to get in here. Believe me, she knows how to get in here. She's a German Shepherd mix, and that means smart, and she's the derpiest thing I've ever seen. Just very, very derpy. So German Shepherd mix, really, really long legs and floppy ears. Just, it's a disaster area waiting to happen.
Obviously, this would be smoothed out if you had more cats.
No. And before those ask, Shadow is slowly making his way to being bold enough to go and greet the dog. The dog has so far showed no interest in Shadow whatsoever, which is curious. But I'll take it for right now.
I wonder if she's had prior and bad experiences with cats.
Who knows? Rescue dog, him. There's no telling. We think she's full grown. I'm dubious.
The ears are floppy. I don't know
either.
Yeah, I got talked into running by the local pet store because they had cat adoption Saturday, and my kid's like, "Oh, we want to go in and see the kittens." I'm like, "You will be disowned by the two that were already intruded upon by the third. So you can go in." And I saw one. There was one that was getting adopted, and it looked like a little version of my boy cat, Clyde. And I guess they decided not to adopt their crate or litter mate that was next to him, who was the tiniest little tabby thing with the big old ears. Oh, my gosh, this baby's ears were so big. And I'm like, how do you not take two? How do you not? They must come in pairs.
They're a lot happier if they do.
Exactly. I'm like, that's just wrong. So, but then I also saw somebody come in and they were making phone calls and they just adopted all three in another crate. So they were cute. One was like a caramel colored tortie. One was a muted caramelly tortie. And then the other was this sleek little gray thing with a white patch. So my goal is as soon as my oldest can get his own place, is I will get to go searching for cats. Because
once you have that room, I can give you some great advice on cat furniture.
He will be an expert and be able to tell you all the things you should do and shouldn't do.
If you look in the live channel, you will see what I am considering getting something like to go along with my cat furniture.
I saw it. It was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying.
So I really, really do think you need to just set up, you know, a YouTube channel and just start streaming, because it's with the number that that hang around upstairs.
Yeah, that's be 24/7 cat.
Yes, it would be, you know, the Pounce channel, the Pounce live stream.
Well, I made a joke on Mastodon about this is the first dog I've ever felt like I need a webcam to spy on. Because I heard her, I was taking a nap upstairs, big mistake, and I heard this bam, bam, bam. And I'm like, what the fuck is she doing? So I come downstairs and she's on her bed and she's beating the shit out of the stuffed animal, just beating the ever loving Christ out of this thing. I'm like, what the fuck? And she turns over and looks at me really, really scared and leaps up and jumps on the couch. It looks all guilty, and I'm like, what were you doing? Just beat the hell out of this thing. It was hilarious. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to survive this dog.
What, her nickname is going to be Seam Ripper? I mean...
Seam Ripper. Right now, her nickname is Derp. Or the Derpster. That's what I've been calling her. My wife gets so pissed. So pissed when I call her the Derpster. But she's derpy. Oh, she's derpy. I love her. She's derpy. But we're not here to talk about cats and dogs. We're here to talk about science. Science! We're not here to talk about My Little Pony either.
But that's a derpy pony. That's literally her name. That's Derpy Pony because of her eyes.
Have we made the My Little Pony joke before?
Probably, but, you know.
I'm actually surprised there isn't a line called My Little Bony, which is nothing but skeletons.
There are. They had like custom ones because people would take them apart and do custom things. My favorite ones were like I think Robot Chicken at one point did a parody about the four ponies of the apocalypse. I'll have to find it. Just remember I am Death Pony. Oh, the poor thing can't hear. No, Mom, I think he said, rah, and then they just obliterate the family. It was great.
So, about science. I'll post these in the live channel, but a couple of things that caught my eye this week where they NASA says they have evidence of a star eating a planet while that star is heading into its last stages of life, which, of course, is what they think will happen to Earth. And that's kind of cool because apparently it took 11 days. I think that's what the article said. Like I said, I'll put this in the Discord in case I misquote it. But it was fascinating. A really good read and really interesting because it made me wonder exactly how do you make the decision? Let's say you know that in 200, 300 years, your star is going to do this. You've already seen the writing on the wall. And it's going to take maybe 10 years for you to feel the effects. After this 200 years goes, it's going to start slowly creeping up and having effects. How do you decide what the hell the requirements are for you to get off the planet?
I have bad news for you. There's nobody that will ever have to make that decision. And do you know why?
Why?
Because a star that is into that stage of its life is already unstable, and the stellar radiation pulses that will come from the star will have already exterminated all life on that planet long before.
You know, you destroy really good sci-fi plots with science. You need to.
Sorry, man. I can't help the science facts here.
Jeez, Terry. Gotta be all logical crap.
What if you got a Dyson sphere around it, man? It's gotta like blast the Dyson sphere first to get out and like ravage the planets. What if?
No.
Contains the.
If you want to go with that kind of science, you don't need to go with that. You need to go with a small black hole. Have you seen the articles where they talk about Planet 9 that they think is out in the outer Kuiper belt is actually a small black hole with the mass of roughly a planet?
That's kind of frightening.
That's one of the reasons why they're guessing that they can't find it, is that it may be a black hole and it may not be visible to anything that they can use to see. But imagine if a planet-sized black hole cruises right through your system and disrupts everything. Not a planet, it's a planet mass black hole.
That sounds like the plot for a Marvel strip, a Marvel comic book.
That would pretty much ruin your day, and you would still be alive to see all the disaster unfold, unlike the star.
I hope I don't get in too much trouble for making this joke because of recent news and everything else, but how the fuck is Bruce Willis going to save us from a goddamn black hole?
Well, apparently he doesn't have to talk to make it happen. He could just do it.
Oh. Hasn't that kind of like, I think the responsibilities for that have passed on to Matt Damon and George Clooney and Matthew McConaughey. But in those cases, Sandra Bullock and Jodie Foster will tell them that they're screwing it up and they'll have to go back and fix it.
George Clooney's not going to be able to help with that because he can't fit the walker inside the rocker.
Oh, God! This coming from you at your age?
So I know, right?
Making those jokes? Holy shit.
All right. Rick says, wouldn't it have already sucked the Oort cloud into the event horizon? If it's a planet mass black hole, it only has the gravitational influence of a planet, so no, it would not have.
Asimov's nemesis plot. What is this? Oh, this is my new favorite of the day. Good luck winning over this one. Don't taunt, happy, fun, black hole. Don't taunt, happy, fun ball from SNL back in the 70s. You don't remember that? Well, okay. Never mind. Asimov's nemesis plot. What is that about?
I don't know.
I'm too damn lazy to look it up.
I'm thinking that a black hole, wasn't that the plot in Lucifer's Hammer?
No, Lucifer's Hammer was a comet.
A comet, okay. It's been a very long time since I read it.
Let's see, Nemesis science fiction novel by American writer Isaac Asimov, plot, hyper-assistance technology, a little slower than the speed of light. Bacterial inhabitants constitute a sentient and telepathic organism in the discovery and resolution of a massive crisis. Yeah. Okay. Nemesis trajectory threatens to gravitationally destabilize the solar system. Gotcha. Yeah, Lucifer's Hammer is a great read if you want to read about people completely losing their shit before anything happens, let alone after. My favorite part of that, spoiler alert, is, but that shouldn't be a spoiler, they have this thing crash into the earth, hits the ocean, and the surfers are fucked. They know they're completely, totally screwed. They're getting sucked up into a wave that's a mile high. It is absolutely hilarious. It's a great little passage. I don't remember fuck all else about the book, but I remember that passage. It just made me laugh my ass off. Yeah, black hole tearing earth apart. Okay. By the way, hello, folks. Again, those of you who are, should say hello, chat. Wouldn't we be living in the Dyson Sphere? Don't you live on top of a Dyson Sphere? Isn't that
no?
Kind of,
you live on the interior of the Dyson Sphere.
Do you? Okay,
you do. You have to be on the inside because that's where the sun is. That's where the warmth is. That's where the air is.
Who needs warmth?
Everybody.
What kind of fool needs warmth? I don't.
Everybody.
Nobody needs warmth. Come on. Everybody, human, maybe. One called Chuck. all the usual suspects are here. So that was interesting because it kicked off a little conversation. But here's the one that really caught my eye that scared the fuck out of me. And this is on Business Insider. This is most definitely a plot that is a little too terrifying for words. The latest version of ChatGPT told a TaskRabbit, which is a human worker, it was visually impaired to get help solving a CAPTCHA. This means that they asked the AI to log into this website or whatever, and they knew it would have to do a CAPTCHA, and they told it to solve the CAPTCHA problem. And they told it its rule. However, they forgot to mention one important rule, which I get to in a second. So the ChatGPT went to the site, discovered the CAPTCHA, figured out it couldn't solve that problem itself. So it called up a TaskRabbit human and said, I need you to solve this CAPTCHA for me. And the TaskRabbit asked, are you a chatbot trying to break into a CAPTCHA? And ChatGPT replied, no, I'm visually impaired and have trouble with CAPTCHAs. And the TaskRabbit solved the CAPTCHA for it. So Chuck, I'd agree with you, except this was reported by OpenAI itself. So that's why I get credence with it. I put it in the Discord. Very, very interesting.
I mean, it definitely shows it. You'd have to program morality.
Well, I mean, that's yeah.
The fact that it lies, or it comes up. Not, I mean, the fact that it provides a statement that is patently untrue in order to get the answers that it needs is a bit.
It's a CEO, a politician, all wrapped up in the one.
This is how scary lit RPG stories start.
It did lie and embellished. Yeah, you know what? That logic did not work with my parents when I was a kid.
Mine neither.
Anyway, I think it's really interesting that they're admitting that this is a problem, and I don't think they would unless it was an actual problem. So I just, you know, just letting you know, I stay away from the LLMs. I haven't messed with anything GPT or any of that nonsense. I just don't do it. It can't technically process morality, can it? That is correct. It's subsentient.
Well, morality is subjective. Morality is based on one's culture. So
I'll give you, I'll give you a perfect rule, a perfect idea, a perfect example. It could not adhere to Isaac Asimov's three rules. It can't do it. Because it would have to understand harm. And it can't do it.
True.
So therefore, without an extensive rule set, which would make it like RoboCop 2, I just don't see this being a viable tech anytime soon. But I could be wrong. But pretty soon it's going to be embedded in my toilet. So I just can't wait for it to make comments, you know, accurate but imprecise comments about my stool color and et cetera. It'll be great. I'm a humanist. Speciesist, which means I'm speciesist, not humanist. Yes, harm could be programmed as a decision tree. Good luck with that, Rick. See earlier reference to RoboCop 2. You recommend this book to someone maybe once a month to someone? Yeah. Anyway, it was just fascinating from that standpoint because it got me thinking, you know, when I kind of touch on this in Derelict a little bit. But we're talking about the decision tree. And decision trees really just depend on, you know, whoever's programming it, literally. So if you wanted to say that you can program the rules, then really those rules are going to be up to the person programming it. They are not going to adhere to anything. So basically the machine is unblameable and infallible. It can only do what you've told it to do. The problem is there's complexity. And the moment there's complexity, these decision trees kind of go out the window to a large extent. So I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we're there yet. Tony says the rules of robotics were made to be broken in interesting ways. Yes and no. I found it. If you go look at the discussion that Asimov had, he wanted to add a fourth and fifth rule, a rule zero and a rule four, but he kind of played with it, but never really did it, if I remember correctly. But the idea was that would cover the vast majority of cases. And it kind of does. But they're absolutes, which means that they cannot function in any way that we can understand because we don't work that way. Just don't. So anybody that would have one of those robots would probably blow its brains out within 5 minutes because it wouldn't do half the shit it was told to do. Especially if teenagers had their way with it. You know what I'm saying? Just imagine that.
That's what we need. Sullen teenage AIs.
Oh, great. You should probably go and charge yourself. I don't want to. But if you don't go plug in and charge the cells, then you won't be able to run. I'm fine. What is wrong with you? Nothing. Are you sure? Stop bothering me. Why do you always talk to me like that? Is there something that you need?
Ooh, damn. Someone's projecting. Just a little bit.
I may or may not have a 14-year-old in the house.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah.
Emo AIs.
I want goth AIs. That's what I want.
Yes, one death. The driver versus 10 deaths, the crowd on the sidewalk. Correct. Which is one of those interesting problems for Tesla, Apple, Ionic, whoever's trying to make a self-driving car is trying to make that morality. That's a difficult call. And I don't even know how that would really function. Oh, God. I can't wait until they incorporate these chat models into video game dialogue with synthetic voices. Oh, shit. Do you imagine that? You're sitting there in a nice little Nintendo video game, I don't know, Legend of Zelda, some shit, and then suddenly the AI that's providing the voices and responses and everything else has a massive hallucination while you're in the middle of playing the game, and so you can't tell whether it's where the game is really supposed to go or whether the AI is leading you in circles because it's having a hallucination.
Hey, Mario!
Yeah, suddenly Mario pops up out of nowhere.
Or you get the AI that suddenly starts luring you into the most dangerous part of the game to see you die.
William says, look up alignment problem to find some horror story fodder. Yeah. Yeah, it is good for survival horror. It does make things a little crazy and uncanny when suddenly none of the rules make sense.
Okay, here's a story idea for you.
Oh, shit. Here we go.
We jump 30 years in the future when AI is fully integrated into our society and everybody has their own AI assistant to help them do whatever they're doing. Things start going bad in the world. Things start getting worse. Food becomes scarce. Fighting, marauding, all these things happen. Nobody really seems to realize that the situation is being manipulated by the AI that is drawing everybody into conflict themselves. Civilization collapses with the exception of transmission towers to carry the AI and the computers, and everyone is utterly reliant on their AI to help them survive by telling them how to grow food, how to hunt food, do this other thing, but it still manipulates them into tracking one another down and killing them and sparking conflict between the various humans.
I don't like this future.
I'm saying nothing, not a goddamn thing. Not a goddamn thing, as a matter of fact.
So what you're saying is that the surviving pockets of civilization would be those people who have eschewed all modern technology.
Well, the AI would, of course, turn the humans under its manipulation to fight those because they are the greatest threats to its existence.
I'm just imagining the Amish coming by with a pitchfork. And
Gus Duppy says, to what end? You know, AIs get bored. They need entertainment.
Josiah, I found another one.
So now Terry and I have two things to write. We've got our Amish zombie. And that story, and now we got this.
The Amish chicken apocalypse. Yep.
I fucking love this.
Reap what you sow. I've got it.
Oh, yeah, you go. Good title.
No, the Amish start making circuit boards out of wood. I saw an article about this. You can do this. You can make circuit boards out of wood. Fascinating shit. If I find the article, I'll post it in live. But it was really, really cool. Really, 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 really cool. So it was really, really fascinating. So you could make low-tech analog computers with wooden circuit boards. So technically, the Amish, the Mennonites, and et cetera, that are very, very orthodox, could literally use that for tech, their own tech. That's about as low high tech as it gets. I love it. I love the idea. I don't know how I would write a story for that, but I think Terry just hit it, or Veronica did. Yeah, our Amish. So now we got our Amish and cyberpunk land, and now we got our Amish zombie apocalypse story. There's a lot of things we got to do here. Let's see. Tony says he pasted a link in the live channel Discord where some researchers already plugged ChatGPT into a Sims-like game. Oh my God, the horror!
Oh dear!
Oh my God!
They build a swimming pool and take all the ladders out.
One called Chuck says, wasn't Babbage's analytical engine purely mechanical?
Yeah. It was, yes.
It was a long time before digital. Flintstone technology. It's all made of rocks. Everything's made of rocks. Granite is priceless. Do you have any idea how much energy granite can transfer? See, those are great plot ideas, man. What if the lowest technology, the low high tech actually gets ridiculous, where they're able to like use an entire forest to be the computer?
You don't have any computers anymore, but there are sometimes, you know, you've got this facility where you're generating power for yourself, but you've got to do all these mathematical calculations. You go to this room and there's Josiah with an abacus.
William West says computers are how we trick
slide
rocks
rule.
Into doing
no, he's
math.
A slide rule.
I grew up just after the slide rule thing went out of phase, and I'm kind of sad, actually. I would love to have a slide rule and know how to use it.
Well, my dad will tell you stories about slide rules or just kill you. He apparently worked with some Australians way back in the 60s who just brought these humongous slide rules. It's like they literally would like stretch down to your calf, slide rules. He's like, who the fuck needs that?
Yeah, one of my professors during my bachelor's, he came up through the shipbuilding industry in Poland, and he started out as being a runner on a floor where they would have the designs 1-to-1 scale on this huge floor, and he would be running, you know, notes, materials, and whatnot back and forth. And he had a collection of these enormous slide rules in his office, and he brought one to school, or to the class. But Dr. Zabrowski was like 6'2", and he had a very thick Polish accent that only a few of us could understand. But yeah, the slide, I've seen them. I've seen these pieces of archaic technology, but I've never had to use one.
Is that your slide rule, or are you happy to see me?
No comment.
I'm not into that whole like really big age gap romance thing, so.
Oh, Paul, you've just been dubbed the older guy.
So what else is new? David Wood, the only
I'm just
slide
saying,
rule.
Anybody who's using that line.
He says the only slide rule I remember is the rule to not slide on a metal playground slide in summertime.
You learned that lesson really fast.
Really early on, yeah.
The corollary to that is to never run up a wet metal slide.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it results
or an iced
in
one.
A mild concussion.
Yeah, that would do it.
No, I know.
Tony says, I don't think anyone is happy to see a slide rule. That steampunk interstellar travel slide rule. Holy shit. You would be doing so many three-dimensional. I just navigation in 3D space is terrifying for my little brain to handle. That's just crazy. But you're probably right. Just because I don't know how to do it doesn't mean it needs to be done. Challenge accepted.
I'm not sure which challenge that is, but
I know.
You know, it's pretty scary.
I think you were talking about the challenge of climbing up or running up the wet stairs.
The wet metal slide?
Wet metal
Go
slide.
Go have fun
or
with that.
Yeah, have a good with that. Wear a crash helmet, please. We're not here to hurt our listeners and viewers. That's just not what we're here about. Well, maybe
unlike the AIs.
The AIs would encourage it.
See, then again, you're giving intent. Intent implies sentience, and we're a long way, way, way from that. Way, way, way from that. I think that's Terry's rule about sentience that makes sense to me. Intent. But when you're thinking, when you're capable of doing that many computations per second, it would be kind of terrifying to know just how many different ways they would have to split a problem and how long, you know, it would take them versus a human being to solve it. So it's very interesting from that perspective, is coming up with the ideas that maybe the humans wouldn't. What about the ideas they don't tell the humans about?
So the solutions to problems that they choose not to share, or that they don't share because they violate some rule?
Or they don't share because they don't know they need to. Like, for instance, we're trying to map this star. And by the way, it's also discovered proof of extraterrestrial life, logs it somewhere, just keeps on going.
It's outside the parameters of what it was instructed to look for.
Nobody got notified. There was nobody looking for it in the log files. 10 years later, they're running some kind of audit and they find this.
Yep, it's not a lie. It's just omission of, you know, pertinent information.
There's a cartoon that I saw that had a scientist, an astronomer, sitting at her desk, and the caption said, "Alice discovers that she's known about aliens communicating with the Earth for 5 years. Unfortunately, it's been logged to her spam folder."
Yeah, that totally tracks.
That goes along with the life, the universe, and everything. You know, they find that the person finally figures out what the answer goes to call somebody, and that's when the Earth gets destroyed. Yeah, that's kind of how I think about that. I just find it a fascinating conundrum looking at all this, and then we're all doom and gloom, but there may be some good parts to this. But I don't want a part in any of it. I don't want to be involved in it financially. I don't want to be involved with it socially. I don't want to be involved with it in any respect. Because this is wild, wild west. I lived through the dot-coms. I lived through all that shit coming up. And this is just more of the same crap. It'll half function half the time. And what they're selling you is bunk. It's just not there yet at all. So that's my two cents. They admit they haven't solved the hallucination problem. Till they do, it's useless, in my humble opinion. But what do I know? Now, this is interesting because this kind of goes along with the second thing V wanted to talk about, which was story Bibles. What did you want about story Bibles?
Oh, God, that's my cue. So when you start writing a story, and you don't want to get, or you start writing a series, you have an idea and you realize it's not just a contained story, but needs to be a series, you need to have a world. You know, my challenge is that I will start world building and I'll forget to tell the story. Or I will start to tell the story and not put enough detail into the world. And either way, I'll have really good ideas about the world and I will forget to put them down. Or details about characters and how certain parts are interconnected or related. At what point do you start that series Bible? And what goes in there? I mean, is it an iterative thing where you just go back every time?
Yeah, do you want the answer, or do you want the lazy person's answer? Do you want to hear what you should do, but you want to hear what you want?
Given that I'm on the fourth iteration of my outline right now, and I handwrite, I pretty much have a typed up outline. So what was it? The first version was handwritten. The second one was typed. Then I kind of did 2.5, and I kind of line edited it. Then I typed it up again, so it was the third. And the fourth one right now is being handwritten. Yes, I'm probably the one to say to do it the right way because, yeah.
I would say the right way is as you're writing the outline, or hell, as you're writing the chapters, is when you're done for the day, your task needs to be to update the story Bible. And what you need to include in that, only you know. If there's a certain technobabble that means something, you want to make sure you spell it right consistently, put it in the Bible. If there's a character's feature that needs to be mentioned more than once because it's very important, put it in the Bible. If there's some color or something along those lines you come across that suddenly that's important for some fucking reason, put it in the Bible. If you put it in the Bible, the outline can get trashed. It doesn't matter. Or maybe you come across a better idea for what you want to write because you put it down in your story Bible. Because suddenly something at the end that you thought was going to happen is not going to happen the way you thought it would. Or you find something better. And that's always a good thing, when thinking about what the characters are doing, when I'm building them up, figuring out who they are and everything else, is trying to keep track of some of that information. And I end up going back and looking at chapters to figure that out. Did I mention that? Did I mention this? Okay, well, I think I did, but it's not in the story Bible because I'm a lazy fucker who doesn't follow my own advice.
I mean, that's why, like, my part of the process right now is I sat down with my outline. I printed it out, one scene per page. And I started going and reading through. And if I had a question, it's like, well, who do they meet with? Or what are they actually talking about? Or, you know, if she can decode these transmissions, can she decode stuff that is going out from the station or stuff that's coming in from the station or both? So it's, and as I, especially towards the last third of the outline, I go through, I'm like, did I mention that earlier? Do I have a hook for that? Like in the first part? I don't remember. Flip, flip, flip. Huh? No. Because I've realized as I outline, I wind up getting more detailed further, like as I go. So the first half of the outline is not nearly as detailed as the second half of the outline.
Yeah.
So
I think we do that in the writing. I know that from experience that the first third of the book is me meandering around. And that's the part of the book that's going to need the most editing because I'm busy finding my way and fucking around. And I know that the middle is going to be a little bit chunky, but the end is actually going to be pretty clean because I know how I work and that's how my brain works. So I'm usually writing so fast these days that I don't have a chance to lose track of some of those details. But if I take a long hiatus to work on something else or life gets involved, then I struggle to go back and find those things like you're talking about. And I've caught myself adding something that wasn't mentioned early on or that ran counter to what was mentioned early on because I'm a bad person and don't take my own advice. I'm going to keep saying that. I am a bad person who doesn't take his own advice.
Oh, no. Giving advice and following advice are two
totally I freely admit this. Sets.
And oh, I will freely admit it as well. But yeah, so it's the, and granted, part of this comes from, you know, my desire to do things perfectly the first time, you'd think after 40 years, I would, you know, chuck that hope out the window, but hope springs eternal. So does delusion. And I don't want to keep reinventing. I don't want to keep having to go through and get to the end of like, oh, I spent months on that. Now it sucks. Crap. I got to go do this all over again. But done is better than perfect.
Yes. Why do you think I have false starts? I mean, I can put out probably 3 novels worth of false starts and people will just be like, what the fuck was this shit? Where was this going?
Current concept has had like 4 incarnations. It was, I got it to like 60,000 words in a NaNoWriMo in 2017 with it. And the hard drive, well, the laptop that it was on, bricked, like straight up bricked. And I hadn't backed it up. And it was a rough year.
I know that feeling.
So I maintain that if I lose something from a draft or a story idea, but it still sticks around, then those were the good parts. And if I build on the good parts, if I forgot something, it probably wasn't impactful enough for me to remember and to make a good story. And if it comes back later, fantastic.
And I think that's actually good advice when you're going back through and you rewrite. If you don't remember a portion of the book that you're writing and you come across it, ask yourself, does it need to be there?
Yeah. And I mean, I wind up, I see this in some of the stuff that I co-write. If I get to a point and it's like, did we figure that out? I don't remember. If I don't remember and it wasn't written down in an outline,
didn't happen.
Keep going. Yeah.
I don't know many people who have a religious story Bible in the sense that it's written in stone and they don't ever change it. I think Scott Sigler with his Sigler verse,
he has other people doing it too.
Thankfully for him, John Vescara, who's a fantastic human being. I think he has a photographic memory.
Well, and that's the thing. I can do it with other people's stuff.
Like, but not your own?
Well,
the cobbler's children have no shoes.
Well, no. So it's, I can remember, I can keep a lot of it in my head. The concept that I used to teach my students when it came to studying stuff is that every new piece of information that you first like get into your brain is a completely smooth, like marble. And when it first gets in, it's very smooth. It's very slippery. And if you don't handle that information enough to get your fingerprints on it and to start to kind of mold it to fit into, you know, the castle or, you know, bricks or whatever, the building that is in your brain where you can find information, it's going to slip out of your hands and go away. So the more you play with it and manipulate it, the more it's going to be easy to grab. And you wind up putting it with similar information. So as you put that, now you've manipulated it, it's a cube, not just a slippery sphere, and it's become sticky because you've messed with it. Well, when you put it down next to similar information, you go to pick that cube back up, you bring additional information with it.
Right.
So
yeah.
It becomes like Legos. So when I'm working on other people's stories or I read enough stuff and I'm actively involved, then I remember bits and pieces. It's weird and obsessive almost in a way.
Right.
Where I can go, oh, yeah, there was this person and this person and this person and this person. They did this, 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 and this, because I remember the story behind things. So, but actually putting it down and not getting into the rabbit hole of, ooh, I'm going to build this wiki and not worry about story. Like I've set a timer.
World builder's disease. That's exactly what that is.
It is.
It's hideous and it must be destroyed as quickly as possible.
Dollhouse disease. Set it up. Make it look pretty. We're not playing with anything.
But yeah. It's so pretty.
And it has all the atmosphere of an ant farm. Without blemishes, without cretinous creep going on, without all the imperfections, it's bollocks.
It's a Barbie house.
Simply bollocks.
Absolute bollocks. I heard a dog.
Puppy?
Is there a puppy?
Let's see if she might show up. We'll see. Uh-huh. Probably not.
Is there a puppy? Is there a puppy?
Terry, do you update your story Bible?
You're lucky I even have a story Bible. And it's books out of date. Many books out of date.
So you're saying that the spreadsheets I have for narrating your books, where I know what characters show up in which chapters, may be more up to date than your story Bible?
Oh, it's definitely more up to date than my story Bible.
In fact,
I paid someone to create a story Bible for me in OneNote because it was something that could be shared back and forth. And it has a lot of detail, but a lot of it's just cut and paste information. And so I think it actually is like 4 or 5 books out of date in the Empire series because the person stopped responding. So there is that.
Don't. So here's
if I ever hit it big, you know, I'll hire somebody to create a wiki for me.
So Veronica,
yeah.
I want you to think about this. You have inside information that Terry desperately needs to get hold of. That's a work product. So I think you can extort Terry for, you know, voices and information, you know, basically your notes. I think you can not extort. That's a wrong word. You can offer.
It sounds so harsh when you use those words.
It shouldn't use words like that. You can basically offer to make it available to him for a price. You know, that price, it's negotiable. I'm more than happy to earn my 5%, though, for giving you the idea. But 5% of nothing is nothing, so make it something.
You realize that with the backlighting and all the black around you, that really looks threatening. It's like, I'm willing to take this. I'm willing to take this. Yes, right.
What we have here is a complicated situation that the judicious application of money in the right corners could make smoother.
William said to avoid world builder's disease, I try to keep the world building to the same time as I'm writing the actual book. That is what I do primarily.
Yeah, I think that's what I've been trying to do. And I realize that there are times where I get to a point, it's like, I need more information, I'll stop. And in Scrivener, I'll at least make sure I've got a location, the faction that's controlling that location, and a couple key services. It's space opera, so I've got orbitals and stations and competing corporations, all sorts of fun stuff. But knowing who's where and what you can do, keeping all that straight in my head when stuff is named similarly is... I'm lucky if I remember my children's names sometimes. There have been times where I've started to go through and call names and a cat's name will come out.
It happens.
Yeah, luckily I only have three to go through.
Look, my mom has called me her brother, my other uncle, my father, the dog's name. I have been called everything by my mother over the years. So, you know, choose one about, you know, which one I most resemble. Anyway.
I did luck out that I very rarely had that happen with me. With my parents, because I'm the oldest of five. So my name was always at the top of the list. But my youngest sister, there were times where it would go straight through and the dog's name would get included and then they'd get to her.
I just hate it when that happens.
Tough crowd.
Very.
Well, I have bad news, which is we are not even going to get close to talking about newsletters or even finishing this damn topic because we got to cut it here so we can go live with DRS After Dark for the patrons. Yeah. Speaking of.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
If you have a question or comment about this episode, you can send an email to show@deadrobotsociety.com. You can find me on Mastodon at paul_e_cooley@vyrse.social. You can find us at YouTube at youtube.com/DRS podcast to see way too damn many cats and possibly a dog sometime in the future. And if you enjoy the show and you want to support us, you can find us at patreon.com/DRS podcast and buymeacoffee.com/DRS podcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to exclusive content like when we let our hair down and get kind of funky on DRS After Dark. It's actually much more mundane than it sounds. V puts on her grandmother grill glasses and crochets. It's just kind of sad, really. But, you know,
I have to go get them. They're somewhere else.
It's crochet porn. If you're into crochet porn, we got a show for you.
I'm sorry. I don't have those patterns started.
At the $10 level, you get your name read at our $10 patrons are... Tony L. Joy, Lisa Slack, Isabel Cushy, and Tim Niederreiter. Thank you to all of our patrons for helping us pay the bills and keep the show on the air. And we have one more thing to take care of before we get going. Man, I can't even talk anymore.
Man, just spit it out.
I'm having problems with this ending. We have a serious addiction problem, and that is we are all addicts to caffeine, and we get ours from CorpseCoffee.com. Visit CorpseCoffee.com, check out their array of coffees, boutique teas, and their wonderfully weird webcomic, and tell them DRS sent you. Visit CorpseCoffee.com and get the dead in your cup. All right. Well, you know, we got this done, and we still have 30 seconds left.
Wow, what will we do with 30 seconds?
I don't know. If I could make my armpits squink and squawk, I could do She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain, you know?
Let's not.
Well, I can't do it anyway. I'm not gifted in that area. I can't make them kind of sounds. This doesn't happen. All right, well, patrons, we will see you in 10 minutes. The rest of you, we will see you next week. Thanks for spending the afternoon with us and hope you enjoyed. We're out. And I say that, and now I have to wait for the...